Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just coming up to 10 past five. You are listening to Men Talk. With me in the studio today is Jeff Miller, Scott Walker and Simon Beale. Hello.
Hello. Hi. Good afternoon.
Thank you all for coming in. If you are listening at home and you want to get involved, you really can. Here's how.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
I found an article about biscuits. The biggest biscuit faux pas. Who knew that was a thing? Well, they did a survey and asked people what the biggest biscuit faux pas is. Among the contenders, according to this survey, is leaving an empty packet lurking in the cupboard, returning half an eaten biscuit to the tin.
Ooh.
I mean, why would you do that? Also, bad etiquette were crumbs left in the bed. Understandably, biscuits being dumped in someone else's tea. Well, I don't know why you'd do that. But the most infuriating habit is leaving the packet open so the biscuits go soft. I'm glad they said that, because that's probably what I would have said. That's annoying. That's
biscuit
the same
tin.
With any packet.
Yeah. Biscuit tin.
Okay, so
yeah,
that's why
you
put it in a tin.
To the origin of the biscuit tin.
Ah,
you can't rely on a packet.
Good idea.
But you've got to be, it's got to be airtight, though.
Well, I'll make sure it is. Yeah. So that's like your Tupperware. You
don't be heavy-handed
sure
with it, because you'll bend the sides and it won't be airtight.
Well, true, yeah.
But in order to have a biscuit tin, you need to be a proper biscuit household, don't you?
I think so, yeah.
And we're sort of not. We've gone through phases, but when you're trying to be good and a bit healthy, you don't really have biscuits, do you?
No.
Are you biscuit people?
No, not really.
No.
Are you?
I am.
Simon's a biscuit person. Have you got a tin then?
I have got a tin, yes.
Okay.
And I like my shortbread fingers.
Oh, nice. They're quite thick. Do you dunk them?
Yes, and there's a particular time. It's about 5 seconds.
Okay, do you count?
No more, no less.
You do.
You count?
I do.
Do you really?
And McVitie's, it's got to be in and out, otherwise it drops into the tea, and then that's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. It counts out loud as well, which annoys his partner.
Yes.
You know?
One, two.
Just turn the TV up.
Oh, I love it.
So is that your favourite biscuit, shortbread?
100%.
Have you got a favourite?
Well, obviously, my brand Walker shortbread is very popular.
ginger biscuits.
Yeah, they were sturdy. They were a double dunker.
Yeah.
You know, you could rely on them. Since I came over here, I haven't really gone on the biscuit train anymore.
That's good with kids as well, to not go down the biscuit road.
Get
that's
out of
very
the habit,
impressive, yeah.
But they're not as good, the Spanish biscuits, as the McVitie's and things like that.
No.
I know,
They're different.
They are different.
There's some different ones.
Yeah.
I mean, I do love if I was to indulge, I would like a what are they called with the bits of chocolate in? The name's completely escaped
chocolate
me.
Chip.
Chocolate chip. Yeah, they're quite nice.
Yeah.
I do. And I remember when we did go through a bit of a biscuit phase. There are chocolate chip biscuits that say are sugar free. God knows what else they put in there.
No.
But I was like, sugar free chocolate chip. I mean, that sounds like a dream. So we had them for a while, and they're really quite good. But they're Moorish, aren't they? That's the problem with biscuits.
Once you have one,
just have a cup of tea with a biscuit. But if you sit there with the packet or with the tin,
which I do,
it's a problem, isn't it?
I think it's when you visit a travel lodge maybe, and you get two or three biscuits in a little packet.
Yeah,
and you're like, you're rationed, aren't you? Rather than having a big biscuit.
Yeah, exactly.
Just for a minute, you would never get that at a travel lodge.
You're not doing that.
You're looking to get a tea bag.
Yes. No, but it's true. Sometimes if you go for a coffee, you get a biscuit,
a little biscuit. That's always nice.
It is nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It feels like a little treat if it's something.
And they're
you don't
just bog standard Spanish biscuits out of the tostadas.
Yeah,
my kids actually like those. And if I don't have the biscuits, I'm being good.
Yeah,
I bring them home and they think, "Oh, it's a treat."
Oh,
you know?
No.
You can tell I'm from Yorkshire. One biscuit,
it.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
So tight.
So, taking pictures of food. A third of Brits take more photos of the food they eat on holiday than of their destinations. The average holiday maker takes 39 snaps a day during a break.
That's
33% took more shots of food than beaches, monuments, or cityscapes.
That's a lot of pictures in a day.
Isn't it?
That's, I mean, my wife likes to take pictures of food.
Do.
But 30? That's a crazy number.
Yeah. So are you a food picture taker? Because people who don't think people who are a bit nuts.
No. But I'm religious because I have to sit there and wait until my wife's taking pictures of the food. So I'm
so you
very
have to be
patient.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay,
how many restaurants is she going to a day?
Not a day. But, you know, if we go to a restaurant, definitely there's a moderate number of pictures. Not 30. I just can't believe.
That's
like
crazy.
Posing from every angle.
Well, I find it weird, and it's like such a thing with influencers and reality TV stars and pretty 20-year-olds, basically. When you look at their holiday snaps, you couldn't tell where they are at all because it's just them posing in their bikini and their dress, five different photos in the same outfit, just in different positions.
Yeah.
And they could be in Rome, Paris, Marbella, like no clue. There's no pictures of where they're going at all. It's just pictures of them and maybe their food, which I always find slightly disappointing. If someone's putting up photos of their holiday to Mallorca, I want to see Mallorca. I want to go, oh, look, there's Palma's, the cathedral.
Yeah,
lovely.
Yeah.
But why do people do it, do you think? Why do people take pictures of food? What's the purpose?
Well, I personally like getting recommendations from people. So I always take pictures of food, particularly if it's nice food and it looks nice, to advertise where I've been. And a lot of people will comment and go, oh, that looks nice, we're going to go. Yeah. You know, it's a sort of helping each other out, I suppose. I'll look at other people's food pics and go, oh, that looks nice, I'd like to go there.
Is it to remember your food if you're like calorie counting or something like
that? No, definitely not.
No.
Not calorie counting.
No.
No.
I know I don't have biscuits, but I don't get that.
No, I don't have a clue.
You look on that plate, it's beautiful, rich food. That's certainly not calorie counting.
No.
It's just reminding yourself of something very, very different than you would do at home or something.
Yeah.
It's just really special.
Yeah.
And it's part of a memory. But yes, it would be nice to say where this was, which country or city.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be anywhere. It could even be in Blackpool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Ooh, no.
But when it looks nice and
it's lovely,
it makes a huge difference, doesn't it? If food's presented beautifully and there's lots of pretty, you know, a big bowl of salads with different colours or whatever it might
be. It's half the joy. It's the experience, isn't it? It's the experience, which is lovely.
But I don't get people going on holiday and taking more pictures of food than their surroundings.
No.
I mean, I do take a lot of photos wherever we are, even if it's just somewhere for the night. If it's up in the campo or if it's a city break. You know, I love looking at the light of the, you know, blue sky against the terracotta colour of a church or something, and then the green trees, and, you know, I love all the colours and capturing it all from different angles. And I remember, like, going to places like the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge, for example. I took over 100 photos walking across that bridge because from every different angle, I thought it looked fascinating. So I took so many. I mean, it's quite a long walk. It's a big bridge. But even so, all the different angles of the blue sky against that sort of the colour of the bridge was fabulous.
Huh.
But so it's easy to do.
Exactly. It's just part of the experience. And it's now, especially with our phones now with great cameras, it's like, it's just, it's not even just to remind yourself of it. It's actually whilst you're doing it, you're taking photographs, and it's part of the whole enjoyment.
Yeah,
you know,
and I love looking back.
Yeah.
People say we don't tend to look back now because of we don't have albums anymore and they're just online. But I actually think that's the beauty of posting photographs, whether it's on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. I was doing it today because I was looking for something particular. You can scroll back and you can see photographs from previous Christmases.
It's almost
birthdays
easier than having an album.
It is. Yeah. It's definitely easy because you can be sitting wherever and scrolling, looking at photos.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I would love to give all the Gen X a disposable camera with 24 photos on, knock yourself out, go wherever you're going for the week. week. How many photos are you going to take of food now?
Yeah.
Or of yourself, or of the scenery, yeah, to get a full picture of your actual holiday? Because
yeah,
imagine they go there, they're in the Thai restaurant the first night. Oh, that looks lovely. Oh, sizzling platter, I'll take a video. No, it's only just a wind up camera, yeah, mate. You can't do that. You get back, you have to go to Boots, not paying for next day development because from Yorkshire. 2 weeks later, you realise, yes, you've got your finger over the lens, yes, and you're taking it. It's a different type of scenario, totally, then, but yeah.
Was that with your Kodak Instamatic?
Exactly, there you go. That's the one. Still got it, still functioning.
It was totally, and I think it's interesting to sort of look, a lot of people with nostalgia, they look back and say, oh, it was better then, but was it?
I remember
incredibly frustrated when you'd get photos developed and it was blurred or your finger was in the way.
No.
You know, if you're taking one picture of the Eiffel Tower and your finger's in the way, I mean, that's it. Yeah.
You had no idea until you had it developed, did you?
Exactly.
So, I thought I had the best holiday with my first lad's holiday with the guys, Barcelona, fantastic. Oh, and I'll tell everybody, we'll wait till I get these pictures developed and my sun cream had leaked and spoilt the film.
Oh, no.
So I've no idea. Well, I don't have any recalling of all my tales of...
You were totally drunk as well at the time. So
well, I was teetotal. That was my hobnobs in there. That was as wild as I got in my youth.
It's a blessing in disguise.
I'll tell you what's also interesting, though. You know, I've got a number of albums at home. I can't remember. It must be 20, 30, 40 years since I've even looked at them. But if photographs are on your phone, you're far more likely just to scroll down and on a fairly regular occasion as well.
Exactly.
So it's much nicer.
But don't get me wrong, I think it is lovely looking back at old photos, but there's normally a reason for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're looking for photos, I hate to say, but for a funeral or maybe for a special birthday or something, and you need to gather some photos together. Otherwise, you know, it's very unlikely that on a Saturday afternoon you're like, oh, should we get the photos out? And you sit there you just wouldn't, would you?
My mother, I think, tended to just love them. She would look through the old albums, go, he's dead, she's dead, he's dead, she's dead.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's scary, isn't it? Looking at a whole photo of people and realising you're the only one still alive.
You can't block them if they run off with an external neighbour, can you? You've still got the photo. There's no editing tool that's going to, unless you actually get the scissors out. That's the Photoshop of that sort of genre.
They used to say that life began at 40, but now it starts at 30 and hits the ground running. In fact, Britons make their biggest life changes during this milestone decade. Can you remember your 30s? And do you remember if there were kind of life-changing moments, change of relationship, change of job, change of country, having kids, whatever, big things that happened in your 30s?
Yeah. I guess I moved from the States to the UK. Just about 30.
What did you do?
Well, it was only a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just show the lighting. Where's that eclipse? Show me a better light.
What's all that grey hair on you?
That's platinum, that is. That's platinum. 30 was quite a big decade for me. I got married, had two children.
Barcelona?
Did I go to Barcelona in my 30s? I think I did. I might have revisited it. Plenty of holidays, new experiences. So, I think 30, you've got a bit more wisdom behind you, a bit more money behind you. The world's your oyster to explore at that point. Whereas when you're in your 20s, you're still finding your feet. In my opinion, as a slow developer, you know. 30s were big. I'd say, sort of settling down in Spain fully. I'd moved here in my late 20s, but really 30s sort of established this is where I want to live and, create a career path down here.
Mm.
Looking back, you think, why didn't I do this sooner? And then it's part and parcel of the life journey, I suppose.
What were you doing in your 30s, Simon?
Married. children running hairdressing salons.
Nice.
For me, it was the 40s. My 40s, definitely, yeah.
Okay.
It's like the old saying, you'd like to put an old head on young shoulders. Mm. I enjoyed the 40s a lot more because in my days in the 40s, Britain generally was booming.
Right.
And everything, there were more opportunities.
Just back around, in the 60s, yeah?
No, the 1920s. Me outside with my handbag. No, seriously, you know, in those days, Britain definitely was there, and you had like with Thatcher and people like, well, whether you liked her or not, she did get the country moving financially.
Yeah.
You know, it was difficult before. It was difficult before, but definitely, yeah, no, for me it was my early 40s.
Interesting.
When, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I had a lot of changes I got married in my 30s as well. I was 37.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I would have been 32 when we got together and then 37 when we got married. So, yeah, it was a big, big changing year. Would my parents have moved here in my 30s or would I have been in my 40s? Not really sure. But, settled down in Spain. Yeah. I moved here in my early 20s. So I've been here a bit longer, but I suppose getting married is a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Realise that this is who you want to be with and where you want to be, and it felt secure, I suppose.
Is that when the party stops then?
No, definitely not.
It's a birthday this weekend. There's no stopping there.
We had a party last weekend, and
parties.
Lots of parties.
As we say up north, a double bubble with PJ. So.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we better take a break.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Men Talk with Jeff Miller, Scott Walker and Simon Beale. Trigger warnings. Ah, what a great subject. Cambridge University has slapped a woke trigger warning on the fairy tale Little Red Riding Hood over adult content and themes of violence. The warning was issued ahead of a free webinar lecture laid on for state school pupils preparing for university. It encouraged GCSE and A-level students, so we're not talking young kids here. We're talking teenagers who have already been through the nursery stage they would have heard Little Red Riding Hood, told them to take a critical look at childhood stories by reading Beneath the Surface, but came with the caution, please note this session will involve discussion of some adult content, including themes of violence with reference to fairy tales.
Oh, God's sake.
I mean, what? Because this is to do... So with Little Red Riding Hood, the wolf kills the...
Yeah.
Yeah. The girl or the gran? The gran, both.
Maybe both, I think.
Kills the grandma.
This is the talking wolf that we're on about, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, okay, the talking wolf. Just to make sure we're not blurring the reality there.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case, there's going to be trigger warnings on everything. I mean, every Disney film has evil people and there's good and bad. You know, in so many children's stories, it's getting children to understand that there are bad people in the world and good people in the world. And it's part of growing up, I think.
I just don't know why you need to issue a warning about it being woke for that age group. That's just
crazy. Well, you've hit the nail on the head. It's this crazy woke world we live in now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. And all these do-gooders are all like to get on the bandwagon. I think they've got some actually emotional problems themselves, people like saying it. They really have.
I can't imagine a GCSE student saying, why didn't you warn me about Little Red Riding Hood?
No,
the
fact not
that
at
the
all.
Wolf killed, you know what I mean? I can't imagine. No. You'd assume that all of them will have, by the age of 15, 16, heard of the story Little Red Riding Hood
and
therefore knows how it goes, so don't need to be warned about it. And they'll be watching all kinds of films and content
exactly.
at that age anyway.
Worse, yeah.
Much worse.
But it's when the wolf says, I'll huff and I'll puff. So you can't say puff anymore. Jesus Christ, what are you doing? No.
Exactly.
You can't say that either.
Oh, it just gets ridiculous.
Yeah.
But you know something, though? You know, you often see from the algorithms, Facebook and what have you and Google, they sort of recognise where you spent 1 or 2 seconds on and then it now comes about everything.
Yeah.
And you just think as well, so it's like, and then you see these articles where people just dream of what can we say that's rubbish just today, just for sake of putting something on. You now tend to think, these people, like Red Riding or what have you, you wonder, is there actually any research, or are they just waking up in the morning, oh, let's put that on and see, and see if we get people to talk about it. And,
it's almost like clickbait, but just
Hasn't even been any research. It's just that thing. Mischief being, let's be very mischievous, and that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Friendship. Britain is in the grip of a friendship recession as 3 in 4 adults say they have fewer pals than 5 years ago. The average Brit now has 11, with men reported to have a bigger circle of around 13 compared with 10 for women. But the average Brit considers only 3 of their friends to be genuinely close. This is an interesting one.
Yeah. I'd say that's true. 3 people, 3 close people. Is about true reality. 13. I mean, that's a football team. Plus.
Yeah. Well, I'm a footballer. I've got a lot of mates, you know. Yeah.
No, but there is a hell of a difference. And this, we always get confused. It's between a real friend and friends who are really good acquaintances, where you go out with and you see them and you enjoy their company, as opposed to 2, 3, I think, is pushing it. A couple
you'd
of friends.
Confide in.
Yeah, throughout your lifetime, where they'll always be there. You might not see them for 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
You'll pick up a second later.
Yeah.
And you're up, it's just there.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, I remember the headmaster, when I first joined this particular school, he pulled me aside. I was only 11 a bit. He said, Simon, that was my name, so I answered yes. He said, Simon, when you leave this school, if you've got more than 2 friends, you're doing very well. And I thought, hey, man's an idiot. You play football with, that's my friend.
Yeah.
But then I realised years later how right that man was. And it's true today as well. Yeah. Still true today.
Close friends, tight friends, sort of.
There is a difference between knowing lots of people and being friendly with lots of people compared to people that you would confide in, tell them things going on in your life, or call on them if you're in trouble and you need some help. Or, you know, I think once you start talking about those things, the circle, quite rightly, is smaller, I suppose.
Yeah. I always class it as, would you let him sleep over at your house out of choice?
Okay,
Because then you sort of define, you know, oh, I like, you know, Gary down the Hogan stand, great guy. I mean, he comes knocking on your door and you're, all right, Gary, what are you up to? I don't know where to stay tonight. You try and help him out, wouldn't you? But you think, oh, don't I really know him that well.
Up the road.
But when your wife goes, who's Gary? I know him from pub, you know, right?
Yeah.
He supports Liverpool. Right, he's definitely not staying.
Yeah, it's true. That's an interesting thing. Would you let them stay in your house?
Yeah, because you do have that massive social circle yourself, you know. You interact with, you know, different social circles. I'm quite popular, so to speak, in San Pedro, but it's different circles of friends. And then you've got your people that you grew up with, you know, your friends that you've worked with.
Yeah.
But not all of them I'd have over at my house, you know. You've got to be selective, as in your party, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know, out of all those people who would sleep over.
Actually,
it's one of those couples only.
With the red and the green light outside the door.
Oh, that's something very different, which is so not the case. Okay, moving on. One more, and then we better take another break now.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Men Talk with Jeff Miller, Scott Walker, and Simon Beale. Barbie. We can all comment on Barbie, can't we? With her improbably tiny waist and giraffe-like neck, Barbie was clearly never modelled on a real woman. But almost 70 years after the doll and her hunky male sidekick Ken came out, they finally had a reality check. Research has shown that their proportions are starting to resemble those of real people. There are 4 new Barbies that have been launched, and they're all different body types. There's curvy, tall, petite, and standard.
Standard.
Ooh, standard.
What's that mean?
Yeah. Oh, so, trying to be diplomatic, which can be difficult. Do we think Barbie should be a different size? Ken, we'll talk about Ken as well if you want from a male perspective. Obviously, Ken, again, has quite a small waist and like bulging thighs and muscular chest.
I'm glad you said thighs there, Jesus.
Yeah. I needed to check myself. You know, he's got muscly arms, he's got a six-pack, so he's obviously incredibly fit looking, I guess you would say.
I'm surprised they can boil it down to just four body types, because that's because they haven't even gotten into skin type or hair type or anything like that. Okay, so here's spitball this one. Why can't you, in a modern world, say as a person, order your own Barbie and specify exactly what you want that Barbie to be for one reason or another?
Yep.
Maybe to simulate your own, you know, origins.
I remember years ago I interviewed a company that did that, not Barbie, but a doll making company that literally did that, and they did it because I think the woman's daughter had a birthmark on her face, like a really severe birthmark, and obviously she could never find dolls that had a birthmark because the dolls are always made to be, you know, this so-called perfect body shape or whatever. So she started thinking, I want to make dolls for every child. So there were dolls in wheelchairs, dolls with one arm. All different face shapes, hair colour, dolls that had no hair because they'd lost it due to cancer. Literally everything. And I thought it was so wonderful. Mm. So there are fit, but I haven't seen them
since.
They just
haven't flied.
No, they haven't, which is a shame because I thought it was such a lovely idea.
You can specify the things you want in your car, clothes, shoes, almost everything. So why simple things like that? Yeah, I don't know.
I also think, going back to Barbie specifically, once you start opening that gate, you then have to cover all bases, like you said. You need to have every skin type, every type of hair, and there are obviously more than four body shapes as well.
Don't forget the gingers.
Don't forget the gingers.
They're unique.
Is there anything wrong with just having a Barbie and this is what she looks like?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just stereotypical. You can't...
I like that there is a company that does that, but I think it's okay that there is also an iconic brand like Barbie, and this is what Barbie looks like. And I don't think Barbie needs to, you know, have cellulite or have a big bottom or
whatever. Did you have a Barbie?
I didn't. I actually had a Transformer. Robots in disguise. I quite like that.
I thought you were going to say a transgender version.
I know.
Yeah, it's that company starting out.
I was very ahead of my time.
I thought, Hannah.
But yeah, Transformers. Nobody complained the difference between those, did they?
Yeah. Exactly.
As you say, it just opens up the floodgates to...
You've got to be missing out.
Barbie is simply a brand, and it's just a doll. I'm sure most people don't think, has it got this? Has it got three arms, four legs? And
no, I think the kind of age that girls are when they're playing with Barbies, I'd like to think they're not insecure about their bodies yet, you know, and they're just going, oh, this is my doll. I'm like dressing her up and whatever.
As long as
they're
not arms, legs, hair, is it?
Exactly. I think it would be incredibly sad if young girls at that age. Yeah. Already thinking, oh, I wish I looked like that. I need to lose weight so I can look like Barbie.
Well, I'm going
to
say, it's a great description. I was saying extremely worrying as well. Never mind your Red Riding Hood, that can lead to emotional problems from that age.
Exactly. You know,
that can really do it.
Well, the big question is, what happened to Cindy? Did she get cancelled?
I don't know what happened to Cindy. I'm sure she's still around.
She could be. Maybe she's put on a bit of timber. She's not as popular anymore. I don't know. It could be Cindy post children.
Not
body shaming Cindy if you're listening. Apologies.
But it's so true. I think so much of these things, it's adults kind of putting it on to what kids should be, and as opposed to the kids complaining about the size of the Barbie themselves.
I think
the kids are probably quite happy playing with their Barbie and you know, loving her long blonde hair and plaiting it and, you know,
just having fun.
It's just fun. They're not thinking about stuff like that.
The children that play with toy cars, not every car is going to be a Ferrari. They're going to play with little dumper trucks and all different things, but it's got wheels and they push it around. Simple stuff, but let's not overcomplicate childhood, I don't think.
No.
Let kids be kids. That's the whole thing. Let them just grow how they want.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Older women, it seems, are eager to lead active lives, filling each day with activities. Their male counterparts, however, are, to put it kindly, somewhat less proactive. According to a study of over 50s in England, women are keen on a life's for living approach, prioritising quality of life over longevity. But for men, the most important thing is simply living longer. Quality of life can mean different things to different people, such as independence, comfort, mobility, and the ability to enjoy everyday activities.
I can't see how quality of life and living longer are on opposite ends of the spectrum necessarily. Because no. You could be an active person and still live a long life and things. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. a bit of weird contrast there.
I think what they're sort of trying to say is that women are more
active.
Well, yeah, as they get older.
And guys just like to sit around and watch TV, and it doesn't really specify, does it?
No, but I think, yeah. I mean, part of me thinks they could be implying with the fact that a big generalization, but women are more likely to go to the doctors. You know, yes. Often the women are convincing their partner that they need to go to the doctor, whereas women are thinking, you know, I want to make sure my health's okay. So, whereas men maybe sort of let that
hide
slide a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, really, isn't it? Because
I'd prefer to get out there and do something. Yeah. I don't know. No, I've never had the inclination to sit at home and
doing nothing.
Wait for life to pass me by or something, or to hide from things going on.
Yeah.
Even the heat. And
I think some people get into like the comfort zone, don't they? And they stop exploring or being sort of that type of adventure, or they retire from work, or they stop doing their favourite sport, and they just... They're quite happy.
Just quite content to chill.
They have the read of the newspaper, or they watch the favourite television programme, the highlight of the week when their grandkids come round or something.
Yeah, but it's a simple life.
Very simple. Yeah. That's it, they don't need to go above and beyond that.
That's their, as long as they're happy, that's their choice. Maybe they haven't really experienced getting out there. There's a lot of people, remember, they could live in a little township in any country in the world. They're born there. They get married there to the local girl. Then they live there and they work there, what have you, and they'll die there.
Yeah.
And they don't really think about anything else because it doesn't occur to them, and they're in their way, they're happy.
Yeah.
Each to their own, really.
Yeah.
For me, that would kill me, but...
I was going to say, there's a tiny part of me that thinks that sounds lovely, but just a tiny part. I get it. I'm sure we all have got lots of friends back home from where we grew up that live that exact life. They've all gone to each other's weddings, their kids all go to school together, the families also, all the mothers are friends, all the dads are friends.
And then sometimes they all go on
holiday
funeral.
Together. They're literally totally in each other's lives.
Yeah.
And I often see... that going on social media, and I think, how lovely. I get why it's appealing, definitely. It's never been for me, but I do understand why it's such a lovely...
I've got a friend younger than me, and he's not being out of literally the 3-mile radius in about 15 years. But he is doing time for stabbing someone to death. That's a bit of an issue.
It's
you for parole.
But I presume he's quite happy. Like, it's his choice.
In the prison.
Because he doesn't want to.
In the prison.
That was just a joke. I've gone past that. The whole thing was a joke.
He won't be listening. It's okay.
No, but honestly, Manchester now, for example, where I was born, is now a very, very... thriving, exciting city. And it's always been a big city, but for me, I left Manchester when I was 17, 18, to go and live in London, because I found Manchester very claustrophobic in those days. Everyone, I always said, you can't have an affair in peace, everyone would know your business. And that's why I enjoyed going to London. And then
you can have affairs.
It's just a big metropolis. Now Manchester is a big metropolis, but in those days there were a lot of people there, but the mind was so narrow. I couldn't stand it. It was just terrible.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, That's Manchester, but Yorkshire, where you're from, that's worse.
Leeds, yeah. Leeds. We were lucky to get out of the pits, we were, I tell you. Oh.
If you walk down the street, if you walk down the street, you got stabbed at night.
Oh, no,
not
so true.
That's
not
the
true.
Leeds Manchester competition.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
There is no competition.
So, yeah. If your search for the one is, this might not apply to any of us, if your search for the one is proving fruitless, there may be a silver lining. Being alone is good for you, as long as you see it as a chance for personal growth. Singletons who see their relationship status as an opportunity rather than a setback are more likely to try new hobbies, travel, learn new skills, and spend time with friends. When you were single, did you embrace your single life? Was it so long ago?
You mean in my 20s before I turned 30 or so? Whenever. That's a difficult question.
It's hard to sort of imagine it. Like, if you found yourself single again, do you think you'd want to, you know...
You'd have to. You go back to the last topic. I mean, if you're single and you're a woman, well, it implies you're going to get out there and do something about it.
Yeah.
You know, and be proactive about it. If you're a guy, you're going to sit at home and watch the telly and... Maybe fester
eat
away.
Biscuits.
You're
so, yeah. Yeah. Out of a tin.
Yeah, I think I believe that's the opportunities come back to different opportunities, as I say.
Yeah.
That's the thing. My wife, she always takes the kids back to the UK in the summer holidays because the kids' summer holidays are massive over here. So I find myself about 3 weeks being the master of my own destiny.
Yeah.
So then I pick up a book, I read a book, you know, I do a few things that I wouldn't normally do.
Yeah.
So I think you have the opportunity where you're not as under pressure to maintain the family as much.
Yeah,
yeah, that's it. So you've got more time on your hands, but you need to be creative and obviously do stuff with that time. Otherwise, yeah, maybe you're going down the pub 7 nights a week, or you're just stuck in front of the TV, which would be not ideal. So yeah, I think the first thing, in my opinion, yeah, you would think, right, what haven't I done that I should do? But again, it's all down to mindset of what they regard as comfort of growing old or being single. It's all these different factors. But ultimately, yeah, I'd give it another go.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is. It's deciding what you want to do with your time and realising that your time is your time and you don't need to check with anyone else and you don't need to keep anyone else happy. So it's whether you want to watch a film that you enjoy or read a book or go to the pub. Or I remember I started travelling when I was 17, 18 on my own, and I realised when a lot of people say, oh, you were so brave, how did you do it on your own? There was a lot of time when you weren't on your own because you specifically go to places where you're likely to meet people, like pubs. You know, there's an Irish pub everywhere you go.
Yeah.
If you want to meet people, go and find an Irish pub and go in and just sit at the bar and go, hi, and you chat to the barman or the person next to you, and straight away you've got a couple of mates.
Yeah.
So I never found any problems meeting people, making friends, because you need to have a bit of confidence, obviously, to be like that.
Yeah.
But if you're in a couple, you're actually less likely to meet people because people don't approach couples as much.
Yeah, exactly.
As if
that's
you're on your own.
Yeah.
So I sometimes it's easier to meet people if you're on your own, as long as you're open to chatting to people.
Yeah.
I remember finding that out. I thought that was quite interesting. Okay, we better take the last break.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to the last part of today's Men Talk with Jeff Miller, Scott Walker and Simon Beale. I don't know if you saw this story. It's from a couple of weeks ago now. The ex-rugby star Danny Cipriani either has got married or is going to get married. And he went through some financial difficulties in his life, shall we say. And they basically are crowdfunding for their wedding. So, you know, like a wedding list for presents, so people can buy things at different prices for wedding. They've kind of done that, but it's for their wedding. So this is how much the flower arranging costs. This is how much the food costs. This is how much the venue costs. They're literally listing how much everything costs in order to put the wedding on, and people can pay for it all.
Criminal.
That's
Yeah.
I think that's just sad.
Utterly disgraceful.
If you can't... have a great day without all that. That's just crazy. And playing something.
You do what you can afford.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think the fact that he was a professional rugby player who has earned far more than your average UK resident.
Yeah.
But obviously his finances may have gone pear-shaped, but that's through no fault of the general public, is it?
No.
That's
out
to his decisions and his spending. So to then go second chance saloon, I'm a bit short here.
Why was he in financial distress? What did he do?
I'm not 100% sure.
What did he do?
He's been a bit of a naughty boy.
Life.
Yeah, he's been a naughty boy in his career.
He's spent it, basically.
So okay.
Yeah.
He's been a very naughty boy.
No. It's just taking advantage. That's crazy.
Yeah. I think it's a blooming cheek.
It is.
And if it was me, I would say, I'm not going to that. You know, you can do with your invitation.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. We'll send him down to Gibraltar. It's easy to get over the border now. Registry office. £250.
Terrible.
Fill up with some fuel. Sorted. Yorkshire price, that is.
And he can get fish and chips there as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that'd be nice.
And a selection of biscuits.
Make sure the shortbread will make visits, I've told you.
Okay, this is interesting. Banter. Which is potentially what you were doing there. To banter or not to banter? That is the question. Particularly if one person's well-meant ribbing is another's bully boy behaviour. There is a fine line between banter and bullying, and most people don't know where it is. Apparently, you should avoid quips about politics, religion, someone's looks, accents, unwanted sexual experiences, and the loss of a family member or pet. They're all things that are deemed to be too offensive and therefore could be classed as bullying. So how do you know the difference between banter and bullying?
I think you kind of learn it, don't you? You experience it and you trial it. Because I remember when I was teaching, you used to get a lot of parents coming in saying, my kid's being bullied. And then when you explore what it's being bullied about, they're just talking, you know, and one person just is a bit more sensitive than another and takes it the wrong way. Or the other person who was dishing out the banter, trying to get it going, just, like you said, didn't know the limits of where to stop and things like that and crossed a line.
Mm-hmm. I think you also got to know, for example, it's a very regional thing. So let's say the north of England, for example, our humour and our banter will be totally different from, say, people from London.
Yeah.
Completely different. So you've got to also know who you're talking to, that you're basically on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
I think that's a very important thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the two that stood out for me when you read the list, I thought, was it dead relatives and pets?
Yes.
I'd probably give that a wide berth.
You know,
I'm quite cheeky. Fair game, but not.
Yes, stay clear of making jokes about death.
Yeah, how's your granddad? Yeah, he's passed away. Yeah, I know. that's not really banter.
Okay.
That's just evil, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody really well to go there for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
It, and that's the other thing, as you say, it depends on your relationship with them.
Correct.
But, you know, schoolyard banter, that can be, you know, a different context. Because sometimes it's the bully showing off in front of the other kids.
Yeah, exactly. And then they will be tired. It's done to them. They don't like that.
Yeah, that's it. But I think, you know, when you've got it with good friends, you can go to the ex-partners and
definitely.
A few of those.
Yeah. But bullying that goes on in schools can often be really personal. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, there was a lot that happened that was all to do with the way people looked. You know, people wearing glasses, getting called four eyes.
Yeah.
People who are overweight being called fat and things like that. You know, it was very personal about people's looks. And I remember at the time finding it really sad and always feeling sorry for the people that were being picked on. Because sometimes you'd see them cry and you'd be like, this isn't okay.
Yeah.
These people don't find this funny. Like, you're being mean to people and comment, saying mean things about the way people look. I mean, there's nothing...
I think in my opinion it's toned down a lot now. I think people are more aware.
I think that's good.
Yeah, from my experience working with youth football and obviously my wife working.
Is that
working,
like woke kind of creeping into kind of normal life and things like that?
I think
got to be a little bit careful.
Yeah.
That line is clawing back a little bit.
Well, that's one of the few times that woke is a good thing.
Yeah.
No, but no, I think, you know, I look back on the school bullies and the play yards and what have you, a lot of them really, they were the ones who had some serious problems, and it was their way of deflecting it. And that's the bullying part.
Yeah.
But as I've said before, woe betide, it's on them.
Yeah.
But I also found in certain schools years and years ago, teachers weren't really trained enough or empathetic enough at all.
I would agree. Yeah, emotional intelligence, things like that. But in schools now, especially like in Spanish schools, you do have to have a bit of banter. Because I worked in a Spanish school for a little while. They wanted my English skills as opposed to my Spanish skills. But at the end of the day, if you couldn't have a little conversation about stuff with the kids, you were just like a robot.
Yeah.
And they appreciate that. Not necessarily exchanging like, you know, quips about, you know, their family or things like that, but they wanted a little bit of banter about, you know, I did this at the weekend. What'd you do at the weekend? No, I did that. And then the normal business could take
place. When I think about some of my favourite teachers, they were the ones that took the mick a little bit in a fun way.
Yeah.
You know, the science teacher would get the naughty boy who's chatting at the back to come to the front and make him smell something that was like really horrible or whatever, that was part of like a science. So we were learning at the same time, but it was his way of sort of punishing the boy in a fun way. Yeah. So everybody would laugh and he'd be like, I'm not going to do it again now, are you? And it was cleverly done. Yeah. You know, and everyone thought he was like the best teacher because he'd always have a bit of a laugh with us all.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stigmas have been diluted now because there are more people wearing glasses. There are more overweight people.
Yeah.
We've got a massive melting pot now. So we used to be, there's one person in our school, Specky Four Eyes, you know who it is.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it's not deemed as such
unusual.
Yeah, it's not unusual. So obviously, society, the children educated themselves and us ourselves we don't focus on that. You know, it's quite a common thing where it may be a rarity, you know, before.
Yeah.
And that goes down to the racism as well. You know, the first Asian kid in school.
Yeah.
You know, the first black child in that environment. But now it's a norm, isn't it? You know,
so you
can have so many different international students and obviously international societies, especially here in Marbella. You know, how many, 150 different international,
The schools here are a real melting pot, aren't they? It's amazing. Many kids are going to school with other kids from all over the world.
And it's fabulous.
Such
an education.
That's it.
Kids.
And it opens the mind up, doesn't it?
And when they become adults, they won't be so arrogant. Hopefully,
or judgmental.
More accepting and what have you. I think that's why when a lot of expats from different areas of Europe, not just Britain, come to these schools here, they're giving their kids a great education in the future. It's the best. Bilingual and everything.
I remember the difference even in the UK. My first year of high school, I was at a girls' school in London, and there were 36 girls in the class, and I was one of four white girls.
Okay,
the rest were either from Africa or from South America or Asia, all around. So I was the minority being white.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Dorset and there wasn't one black person in the whole school.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's imagine that as a difference.
People
growing up in Dorset weren't seeing black people was a rarity.
That's crazy.
Whereas growing up in London or somewhere like here, it's all completely normal.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Fascinating.
It's wonderful.
So, yes, we have learnt a lot today. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, excellent.
Thank you all for being with us. Thank you to Jeff, Scott and Simon for a great show.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.